The way theories fit into absolute thinking systems. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing and University of Philosophy and the Absolute Monastery and Church of God Unlimited and the Worldwide Healing Ministry and the Global Seminars and the Healing Ministry and I don't know, what else have we got?
School of the Master.
School, oh, yes, indeed, the School of the Master here in Campo, California, bringing you the Absolute Philosopher. With that sort of a nonsensical beginning, you wonder what good can come out of that type of a talk. We go back to our title again, The Way Theories Fit into Absolute Thinking Systems. Recently, we've been talking about theories and absolute. Now, the creation of the world is a theory. I don't think that Adam and Eve or Moses or Abraham were there at the beginning of the creation of the world, because their book in the Bible is supposed to have been reported by the Spalding Bible, not the Spalding Bible, but the Baird Bible, as 440 years B.C., which, of course, doesn't do it. Now, the King James Version wants to put it back at 5,000 years, the beginning, the Bible's first beginning. So, science doesn't like to have that statement made. Science said it has been more like 15 billion years since the creation of the Earth. And now, to what does science attest the creation of the world? Anybody know? The Big Bang theory. Or they have a theory, the Big Bang theory. And it's a glorious theory. Oh, a beautiful theory. Now, it sort of upsets the Pope's theory that's been going around ever since the Christian Bible has been developed, saying that God created all these things, and it wasn't any individual atom that didn't know its way around that burst open to create the universe. But that's what science would like to have us believe, and that's a theory. And scientists are buying it by the hundreds, by the thousands, by the millions, buying the theory that the world was created, that is, the universe was created by one recalcitrant atom that didn't know where it was supposed to be, and it was just out there in the middle of nothing, and it split apart because it wanted to have partners, so like an amoeba, you know. And it wanted to have somebody else in this world. But it got its wires crossed, and it split until it became the entire universe, loaded with stars, and loaded with planets and galaxies and Milky Ways like ours and hundreds of other wonderful phalanx of stars. It's fantastic. So that's a theory. Who could prove it? Who can prove that theory? Nobody. Who can disprove it? Nobody. And you see, the wonderful thing about absolute steps from the realm of the relative, where things are limited, and where we theoretically know what's going on. We say 2 times 2 is 4, and in absolute, perhaps 2 times 2 is still 4, but there's nothing to have 2 times 2, because everything is 1. And who says that? Who says that?
That's right.
That's the philosophers who say that. And the philosophers are the ones who created the universe. They have given us the story of the creation of the universe. The Bible story is only one story. That's the Christian story. There are hundreds of Bibles that are written by hundreds of philosophies that are around the world, and some major ones that we know about and some minor ones that we don't. And all of them have a story somewhat similar to the great story of creation. Perhaps instinctively they all drew upon the same source of information. I wonder what that could have been. Same source of information. Well, think about that as you think this, the way theories fit into absolute thinking systems. Absolute thinking systems go into the concept that all is one, that it is the word in the dictionary for deity is absolute. First cause, it is the reality of all, it is the foundation of all, it is law. law of cause and effect and law. It doesn't say law of cause and effect. It just says law. Because there's no effect that can come from the law. Because everything just is. And if you have an effect that's coming from everything that is, then you're having a multiplicity of that which is. And that which is indivisible. It cannot be divided up. It cannot be separated from itself because it's the allness. It's like saying you're a little bit of God. This is what many religions teach, that you are a part of God, that God is in you and in everybody else. And you get a little part, and you get a little part, and you get a little part. Now, you wonder what part you got? The part that came over the fence last, you know? And now, what part of God are you? Well, God cannot be divided up. This is the theory. The absolute cannot be divided up. It cannot be separated. So if you have anything of absolute in you or anything of God in you, you have the allness of, you have the concept, and that's the point, you have the concept of God in you, the concept of absolute, and it has nothing to do with quality or quantity. Quality, perhaps, which is the best, but who is to gauge what is best or not best among nothing? Because there's only one. And if there's only one, how can you compare it? How can you judge it? How can you say it's the best? It's quality. So there's no quality in heaven, and there's no quality in absolute. There's no quantity in absolute. There's only one, and of course one is considered a quantity too. But how can you have quantity unless you have numbers? And if you only have one, you don't have any numbers. We say one because we are thinking from the relative point of view where there are many. And so if all is one, then the many are all one. But I find it most charming that religious scientists are listening to the scientists and believing what they're saying, but the religious people don't change their philosophy. They don't change their point of view. They still hold to the Old Testament. They still hold to the Bible. They still hold to the teachings of the wonderful prophets of old who speak about categorical conditions of earth and moon and sun and stars. There was an article recently that the world was set with a time clock. I'll have to get that for you. The world was set with a time, and the time remained changed from the Gregorian time to the decimal time. So it was tenths, and there was 10 hours to the day, and or was it maybe 20, but it was 10 hours to the day, and it was 10 days to the week, and it was 10 months to the year, and so forth, you know, just all on the 10 period. I'll have to, as I say, read that to be sure for you. But that was in effect until the time of Napoleon. And Napoleon changed it because he wanted to be approved by the Pope to be the royal man that he was. And, of course, as soon as he changed it and was approved by the Pope, not approved by the Pope, he didn't change it back. But he was put out of commission. But the decimal time system was not. And the article that I read had a listing of all the time systems, not all of them, many of the time systems in the world, and how they were begotten, and how they were created, and how they were defined. And it was just a random thing. It was just a random thing. It did have something to do with the sun going up and going down. It did stay within that realm. But it had the sun go up and down, perhaps, in 10 units. Sure. And the 10 units were fine, you know. And I believe it had, you see, the Romans worshipped all their gods on a Saturday. And they had an eight-day week. But the Saturday was the day that they worshipped their gods on. And I'll get those details because it's kind of fascinating. But all that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense when you say all time is here and all space is now. Our scientists are touting that very strongly, but that doesn't make any sense. If all time and space are here, then why are we looking for the future and why are we recalling the past? And why are we not living in just the now? And if we were to live... Shut that off and start again. If we were to live in the now, then what would happen to us? We would be forever in this moment. There would be no other moment. But if you had the ability to stand back and observe, you would stand back and observe that in this moment, there were a jillion things going on in a jillion is's. And so each is was expressing a portion of the allness, but not a portion, but the allness as it was in the oneness. So talking about absolute is like talking about chocolate frosting. You know, you take a lick of it at any point of the cake and it still is chocolate frosting. It still is delicious and it doesn't mean anything. You know, you can make chocolate frosting and make it very delicious and make it very, very succulent. People love it. And not use chocolate in it, and not use sugar in it, and not use milk in it, and not use butter in it, and not use any of the normal items that you'd use in it. They could all be artificial. Artificially created to point that out. We have artificial butter. We have artificial sugar. We have artificial salt. We have everything artificial if we wish. And it is just as nutritious for the body, these artificial things, as the things that are, so to speak, natural. But of course, that brings us to another point. If all is one, if all is, and we go giving names to things, like we call a rutabaga a rutabaga, we call a cabbage, and a cow a cow, and they're all one, what difference does it make if they are the artificial object or the real object?
That's right.
It's all a matter of our thinking, and it sort of makes us think about it a little bit, mm-hmm. and really, it sort of validates what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It shows that all is one. It shows that all time is now, and all space is here. And when we think of it in that relationship, we think, well, why are we bothering talking about something that is so elusive and so unrewarding? Because to what benefit is it to know absolute? To what benefit is it to know the isness? To what benefit is it to know the allness, the nothingness? Those are fantastic concepts. And they're concepts that have no bearing, no basis, no utilization to a human being. Only when a human moves in consciousness from the limited form that he has given himself here on earth to the formless and the allness does it have any meaning. And then it has no meaning because there's no purpose for it. It just is. It's like saying, why does God, as we understand God, exist? And, well, obviously to be itself and have fun. And who knows how God has fun? And it's sort of irrational and makes you think, now, that's stupid, you know. How do we think about that? Well, think about absolute. And when you think about absolute, you get a whole new picture of values for yourself. Because the little lady sitting in the rocking chair really knew the absolute. She sat there in the rocking chair while the old man was lying on his deathbed, and she was saying, ain't nothing the matter, nothing ain't the matter. Ain't nothing the matter, nothing ain't the matter. A couple hours later, when the family came home, they said, where's Grandpa? And he can't move, you know. Did he die? Did they take him away? No. I don't know where he is. He didn't come through the door here. And so they went out in the house and found him in the kitchen having a bowl of soup and sitting there eating a sandwich and enjoying himself, deciding not to die. Well, it's just like Herbert Marty's mother-in-law. Herbert Marty and his family wanted to go skiing, and they had a skiing party all set, and then the mother-in-law decides she's going to die. And so Herbert says, now, are you sure that's what you want to do? She says, yes, I'm ready, I'm going to go. And then they say, well, now we want to go skiing, so hurry it up, please. And the old lady says, what the hell is this, you know? I'm not going to die. And she didn't. And she was going to die. The doctors had everything said that she was going to die.
Yeah.
She had all the whatever the doctors say is going to happen is going to happen. But she said, nope, I'm going to live. I'll fight you all. And I think she came out here after
yeah.
that. Yeah. She came out to visit us here, and she became a very dear friend. But isn't it interesting how absolute is so final, and yet it's not final.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute is just the open door. One day we'll have the language to describe what goes on in absolute. At the moment we're describing it in relative terms, and it doesn't fit. It doesn't make any sense. But once we get absolute terms, I told Katrina, her daughter, I said, I'm going to give you a job. And she said, what is that? I said, I want you to write a dictionary of all positive words. No negative words, just all positive. So she started. And she says, after a while, I can't do that. Because every word seems to have some sort of negative attachment to it. And to describe positive words, you say it's not negative, which is not the answer. But then again, doing that would be difficult. Now, if I were to say to you, I will give you each $1 million. If you can, and the time limit doesn't matter, if you can give me a dictionary of, let's say, 800 words of absolute, describing absolute, describing the elements of absolute, the aspects of absolute, do you think you could do it?
Yeah.
No. You're smart, yes, you know. Yes, I can do it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But you start. Just start writing it down, and you will soon run out of things to write down. You will soon run out because you jump right into the relative. And you will not stay in absolute consciousness. Allness, isness, you know, nothingness.
But every word is an absolute word.
Ellen,
so if I say
Ellen.
Yes.
That's not correct, as my thinking is. Every word defines an action or activity. An absolute activity is, so to speak, not definable. How do you define isness? Go ahead, tell me. Now, how do you define isness?
I say everything is an
is. You cannot say everything. And you cannot say it's an is, because that's not true. The is the concept. Everything has a concept behind it, and the concept behind it is the is. So you say the concept cup.
Yeah.
And you say the concept door and the concept this. Well, that's begging the question. What you want to do is say, what is absolute? Absolute is the plethora of concepts. But absolute of itself is absolute. And it is the first cause, you might say, and that doesn't make any sense. Because there's no beginning. You see, and you keep pushing away all of the possibilities because it doesn't make sense when you really think what absolute is. And is absolute the allness? The allness what? Is absolute the isness? The isness what? Is absolute the nothingness? The nothingness what? If you start defining the nothingness as a lack of something, you know, that's not acceptable, because there is nothing for which it is the lack of, because the nothingness is the allness, and the allness is the nothingness.
Absolutely.
But how do you define it? Because they mutually exclude each other that way.
It's not even
because
the allness.
They're self-explanatory.
They're self-explanatory, exactly. And you cannot add another word to it that even begins to define what it means. And that's what I say, you run out.
But it's not even the allness, it's the all absolute.
Well, we're talking about the concept, and the concept becomes an S. But we're talking about the concept of allness. Now, what is the concept of allness? Or what is the concept of all?
Allness.
Thank you.
Yeah,
what is the concept of all? How you think of a concept of cup, and you think the ideal cup, the perfect cup, the unique cup.
Mm.
But how do you describe the all as having a concept?
No, you can't.
And how do you describe the nothingness as having a concept? And so forth, you know.
Mm-mm.
So these are just sort of charming, debatable concepts that we play with. And one day, when we have trained ourselves to forget that the illusions are real, because we believe that the illusions are real, when we no longer think the illusions are real, then we will come up with what that all means and what it all is. But so long as we believe the illusions are real, we will always sally back to the illusions, go back to them, check with them, check with the illusions, and use that as our definitions. Kind of interesting, you know. But it's beyond our comprehension. Now, why do you think that fellow wrote about what I said in the gist? Remember, we got a letter from this guy.
Oh, Walter Starkey.
Walter Starkey. And basically, what did he say?
Basically, he said that you achieved to describe what is actually undescribable.
No, that's quite a statement, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a statement. And you know Walter Starkey?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He wrote that book.
Yeah. Well, he wrote many books, but I mean that. But he got our gist, and he was on the list. Somebody put him on there. We had no, well, maybe because he was associated with INTA. And you put him on? And so then he read it. And we were running our articles on the relative absolute at the time, or the relative or absolute?
The relative.
Relative, which was our beginning book. And we were describing these concepts. I was describing the concept. And he remarked about it. But in the Philippines, our friends in the Philippines, they were reading the book out of the gist, and they said, that's our textbook. That's our theme book. They were using it for that. I said, go ahead. And we haven't gotten around to publishing it yet. It's all done. It's all printed and all set. It just needs to be put in a book. And then we have the second book all done too, and the third book I have half done or somewhere there, but it's a stifling job doing the third book because it's just absolute. And can you imagine writing pages of absolute? it's a great challenge and a lot of fun, but also it's a lot of confusion if you're not very, very careful on how you handle it. So, the way theories fit into absolute thinking systems, the absolute says all is, and science says this is how all is and how it became to be. And that the Big Bang Theory has that one little atom that was out there, where it came from, nobody knows, and it was unhappy, so it split. And when it split, it created the entire known universe, and probably even the unknown universe, because the universe probably undoubtedly exists far beyond anything we can conceive of. Because, I mean, there is infinity. There is eternity. And where does it start and where does it stop? Fascinating, isn't it? Well, enjoy and know that I pick up your cough because I think it's fun. And just have a wonderful evening and have a wonderful time with yourself. I love you, I love you, I love you.